from sandy beach to sandy beach. Here we are. Anyway, so hat tip to Sean. Thanks very much, mate. So welcome to Journeys with myself, JP. And this is the last journey of the show. No, it's not the last journey of the show. It's the last show of the year. When are we? It's the 30th. Gosh, the 30th of December, 2013. Time seems to be spinning and spinning and spinning and sort of curling itself into a little twisty bit right at the end of everything. So that's one of the subjects we're going to be talking about. I am speaking with Ms. Nancy L. Hopkins, author of Cosmic Reality, www.cosmicreality.com, easy to find. Cosmic Reality brings together some very grounded ideas that were gleaned from years of working as a NSA security analyst, plus experiments by herself and with groups in telepathy and remote viewing, and compiling a few wise nuggets of cosmic rules and cosmic laws. I welcome Nancy L. Hopkins. Good evening. How are you?
I'm fine, Jay, and you're doing good?
I'm doing very well. And what a marvelous microphone sound you have, I must say.
Thank you, Jay. Hello out there in the radio land. You never can hear them talk back, you know, but you can feel them. They're
yeah,
out there.
You can hear the wave, feel the wave come back. There's like a couple of seconds delay, or there's like a couple of minutes delay actually, between us speaking and them hearing, but so we are already dealing with a time travel situation. Now I was listening to you speaking briefly last night with Luce and with Cindy, and only being able to get like a few nuggets here and there of what you were saying, I would really love to give you the entire space, the entire floor. It's all your time. Because, you know, time is running short, it seems. There seems to be a moment now upon us. Some call it the end of days, some call it the end of time, some call it the end of time itself. And yet, we still seem to be having our daily routines and all of these other things. Some say we should be in the fourth dimension by Tuesday. Well, or by Wednesday at least. Who knows? That's what they said. First, you know, 1st of January, step out and it'll be fourth dimension. So, Nancy, I'm going to now shut the heck up and let you breathe in and breathe out from your heart.
Okay, fourth dimension is oftentimes actually defined as time. Within our third dimensional science, we think of height, width, and depth, and then time as being the fourth dimension. In reality, the quantum physicists believe that there are at least 11 dimensions. Now, when I first started out in way back, gosh, it started in the 80s, late 80s. You know, no, it was in the middle of the 80s. I encountered a lot of really out there kind of books that I've never encountered again, and for the most part, they've simply disappeared. I don't know where they've gone. But they talked about dimensions, and they talked about the coming of a shift in human Earth dimension from where we're at, which is the third dimension, with fourth dimension being, I think of it more of a transitional, almost a transformer kind of an energy field, more so than the dimensions that we think of, at least what I learned from those very esoteric books, was that the third dimension does not, the humankind and Earth, is not going to jump to the fourth dimension. We're already involved with the fourth dimension. Where we're going is actually the fifth dimension. And those books explained the evolution as being an evolution within the concept of the universe, not strictly Earth. And it's the idea that if you are in the fifth dimension, then your goal is to move into the sixth dimension. And from the sixth into the seventh, and the seventh into the eighth, and all the way up until the 11th. Now, of course, we're down here at the bottom of the line, but it seemed to, my interpretation was that it was everything in the universe was dependent upon humankind actually making the leap to the fifth dimension. Because those in the fifth dimension cannot make the leap to the sixth until they have, we have made this leap. It's some kind of a cosmic law that I obviously do not totally understand, but my understanding was it was very critical to all these other entities out there that humankind survive and become enlightened to the point that they understood fifth dimensional energies. Now, I couldn't tell you what fifth dimensional energies are except for, because, well, I do think that we experience them. I think that we are experiencing them in many ways right now that would not be discernible or understandable or observable by most people. However, there are people who are in basically drawn to the truth movement, to the conspiracy concepts, to the there's something more, there's something wrong, we've got to find out what it is that's right. And we've got to find out how we can make this wrong right. And that's the key, is we have to understand that there is, A, a wrong, and B, that there are solutions. And initially when you encounter this entire question, you're encountering a lot of negativity, and it's frightening, and there's, oh my God, what are we going to do? This is terrible. But now we are at a point of enlightenment in our own development, where we can now say, wait a minute, okay, these are not, we're okay, we've survived the understanding of the evil. Now let's move into an understanding of how we can solve the problems that we see. So there is an enlightenment. It's already occurred. We would not be here talking this discussion if it had not occurred. And that's what longevity gives you when you've been in this business as long as I have. Because I'm 65, but I started when I was 15, and probably before that, because I was born into a family where they never, I was the oldest of 10, so, and we moved away from the extended family, so there was nobody there to tell you how to think. You really had to learn how to behave. Your social skills all were developed within the context of the kids that you grew up with in an environment that is so much different than today. You're growing up in a neighborhood where all the mothers talk to one another. They all watch out for each other's kids. So you're not in a state of fear. You're in a state of what's the best way of developing social rules and regulations, because nobody was telling us what to do. Remember this, I was born in 1948, and I grew up in the 50s, where everything was la-di-da-di, everything is fine, and then into the 60s, which was all predicated because of the assassination of John Kennedy. That was a timeline change. That was a major timeline shift. If Kennedy had not died, we would have gone through an amazing evolution of peace and understanding on this planet. And in the book, Cosmic Reality, the first book, which is the John Kennedy Jesus Christ Connection, I actually make the link between John Kennedy and Premier Khrushchev of the Soviet Union and Pope John the 23rd. They began to understand that there was a dark organization of power that was actually the ones that were in power. And they were manipulating the governments and the Vatican and every other seeming power point. And they were manipulating them. And it was these three men that began to understand it and began to try to fight it within a 3D context. Now, on some timeline, they won. They absolutely won. Now, what would that mean? Let's assume that they have won, that you know, the dark side gets shot down, Kennedy lives, the Pope survives, the Pope was also murdered, it was a fast-acting cancer. Khrushchev survives because there was a blackmail that said, get rid of Khrushchev or else we'll find Oswald guilty of working for the Soviets. But if you just get rid of Khrushchev, then we'll make sure that we tell him that it was a crazy lone gunman that was so crazy he actually went over to the Soviet Union. So they blackmailed the Politburo to get rid of Khrushchev. So all of that happened in the timeline that we're existing on. Now, one of the things that I have understood about timelines is that the one that we're conscious of, because every decision you make creates a timeline, because it's all energy. It's absolutely proven scientifically there is no matter. Matter does not exist. It is energy. Clear, simple energy. And the reason that we think things are solid is because when we are vibrating at a frequency that is below the speed of light, anything vibrating below the speed of light is perceivable by us because we're all vibrating at that same speed. But if something is vibrating beyond that speed, you can't see it. You can't detect it under most cases. You know, if we get into it, I'll try to explain to you how you can actually begin to see these other things. Mediums. Mediums are actually able to increase their frequency so that they can pick up the energy, mental energy level of people who are on the other side. And the reason that you can't see people on the other side is because they're no longer within the context of an energy body called the third dimensional energy body, the physical body that's operating below the speed of light. They're still there. The only thing that's changed is they dropped the physical body. Everything else is the same. They still got their emotional body, their mental body. They've got all their memories. It's just that you can't see them, but they can see you. So we're talking energy bodies. We're talking energy within the context of the universe, and we cannot limit the universe. So when somebody makes a decision, that particular decision is like dropping a stone in water, and this ripple goes out. Now, if it's a big stone and a solid stone and it hits just right, the ripple goes on for a very, very, very long time. If you have a situation where it's a small rock and it really isn't very important, the ripple is small, it doesn't really matter. If you think of those ripples as timelines, the one that doesn't really matter just kind of fades out, uninteresting. The bigger one goes on for a while. Now, if you think in terms of all these multiple decisions that you make in a lifetime, creating these timelines, it would seem preposterous. How could this possibly be? But it's almost like trying out, like as a writer, especially when you're doing fiction. You know, you sit there, well, I do anyway, I sit there and I read I got a movie screen in front of me and I play out a part of the book, you know, and let's change that. And then I play it out again and they go, oh, that's a little better. And I play it out. That's what we're doing with our lives in a timeline things. So when a timeline decision is not working out for you, it is not in the, in what your soul needs, then it just simply fizzles out. Now, on some timelines, you have bigger decisions. Decisions that are not even in your control. The timeline of the reality of the Earth. That timeline is only partially under your control. You can decide at any given time to leave a given timeline. You just have to decide you're not going to play the game. And you can go off and you can make out whatever timeline you want. And if it's in your self-interest, that's what's going to happen. But if it's not in your self-interest, if it's not going to allow you to grow into what you can become, then that's not going to be allowed. It'll just fizzle out. Or you'll die on that timeline. The absolute focus of the universe is to learn, to experience. I really sometimes think that God, which is the prime creator, the consciousness that started all this, started creating out of boredom. You know, if you're all powerful, then you go, oh, gee, I wonder what it would be like to do, boom, boom, all of a sudden, manifestation. Now, we're just a step down from God. And I know that sounds to be kind of a little preposterous, but from a sense of the energy grid, it's not preposterous at all. We have a consciousness, limited compared to God. Just a slice of a slice of a slice of a slice. But within our own universe, the universe of like a bubble that surrounds us, we are in charge. We can manifest within that bubble. All we have to do is believe we can. And to do it in a way that essentially works. And I'm not sure that there is any one way that makes it work. I wouldn't limit the universe in any way, shape, or form. What I've tried to do in the writing of Cosmic Reality is to demonstrate with my life experiences what I've discovered that works for me. And if it works for you, excellent. Now, where I learned this stuff, and that's where Jay earlier tonight asked me to go over, it really started in about 1985. Now, I had done a tremendous amount of research into 3D psychic warfare, telepathy, remote viewing, the Philadelphia experiment, time travel, a whole slew of, you know, alternative science and thought, and never mind the history. But it really started when my next door neighbor and best friend got married, and we had, I'd helped her out with the marriage and everything, and as a gift, she gave me an amethyst pendant. And I started wearing this thing, and it didn't take me very long before I started feeling really kind of weird. And I knew it was this pendant. Now, other people may not have gotten the connection, but as an electronic warfare officer, and earlier, Jay, you said that I was with NSA. I was actually with the Army Security Agency, which was the Army's version of NSA. But when being an electronic warfare expert, I thought in terms of energy already. So when I started to realize that I was feeling different changes in my body energetically, I immediately believed it was the quartz crystal. Amethyst is only a piece of is a part of the quartz family. So I'm going like, oh, this is, and quartz is used in all kinds of electronics. We wouldn't have the world we have without quartz. And that's because of the piezoelectric effect of quartz. When you look at a quartz crystal and you put pressure on it, even though you do not see it by your eye, it can be measured. And what happens is that pressure, or if you hit it, or an electronic charge of one sort, the crystal actually immediately vibrates, and it sends off an electromagnetic frequency that is always exactly the same.
That's right.
Always exactly the same.
And people use these every day. I mean, if you doubt what Nancy was just saying, when you use one of these electronic cigarette lighters, electronic actually means it's got a tiny piece of crystal in it and a little hammer effect, and you get 500 volts out of the really, really like 2 or 3 millimeter sized piece of crystal. You get quite a lot of energy, enough to make a spark that can jump a gap that can light a flame. Anyway, I'll just...
No, that's exactly what the truth of it is that everywhere you look, there the concept of quartz and piezoelectric movement of energy is what is the in timepieces, because it's absolutely so constant in timepieces. That's where you get your time measurement in your watches and your clocks. So when we have this quartz, this amethyst quartz, what I knew was happening was that it was generating an energy. And I had never anticipated confronting a naturally generating energy that would be so powerful in a very small, this is a small pendant, that it would actually be physically affecting me. So I immediately went out and found books on gem energies. And sure enough, the the first book I read had symptoms of that you're getting, you know, that you're being affected by a mineral. And sure enough, all of the symptoms in the list, that was what I had been encountering. So this opened up a tremendous avenue of research in understanding the connectedness that we have to everything that's mineral. The earth is a mineral being, and we as energy bodies are continually being affected by changes in the electromagnetic field of the earth. One of the biggest or most powerful examples of this occurred when the cosmonauts, the Soviet cosmonauts, were doing the first long-term space flights. And this was back in the 70s, late 67, well, it was mostly in the 70s. And I was getting reports, everybody was getting reports because of who they were on the news, that the cosmonauts coming back from these long-duration space travel, they were coming back with their brain scrambled. Now, at first I thought this was some kind of propaganda on the part of the Americans, because what would be scrambling their brains? Well, it turned out that what was scrambling their brains was that they were no longer within the electromagnetic field of the earth, they were above it. And because the brain is a computer designed to work in a specific electromagnetic field, once they were outside of this field, they started to have their computers, their brains, break down.
So our brains are essentially like wireless-powered nanobots.
Absolutely.
Linked
into the grid of the Earth. And it won't work well if you're in a different bioelectromagnetic field, or not at all. So the Soviets, what they did was they did a lot of research in this, and what they discovered is that men were more susceptible to this electromagnetic field change than women were. Now, there could be a lot of reasons for that. I don't think that I've never seen any indication that they ever were able to determine what the difference was. But the reality is that
heart.
Say again?
It's probably the heart center.
It's in with the entire electromagnetic, bioelectromagnetic body that is dominated either male or female. It certainly is very basic, because these changes are not at the matter level, they're at the electromagnetic level, at the energy level. So, we don't want to get into the male and female energies, but just be aware of the fact that the electromagnetic field of the earth affects human beings to such a degree that just being above the field can make you go crazy. Now they make artificial electromagnetic fields within the spacecraft so they don't encounter that problem. But what this demonstrates to us is a very pertinent fact, and that is that position in the universe determines the local space. In other words, if you've got the cosmonauts who are not in the bioelectromagnetic field, they're totally in a different place than somebody that was directly below them in the earth, even if they were in an aircraft. Because as energy bodies, electromagnetic changes actually alter place. They change place. And we're concerned about place because time is an illusion. It is only a relationship of place and space. Now, space is easy. That's us. The physical space that we own is space. It's our space. Now, that space can be expanded. You can think of yourself as being inside a bubble. And you can decide that you want to have more control and you can actually increase your space, but that's determinable by you, not by the outside. Place is totally different. It's not simply a geo positioning within the universe. it goes way beyond that. It means the position, but also the electromagnetic field at that position. You might have gone, we keep going around this, we go around the sun, the solar system goes around the galaxy goes around, nothing actually, it just revolves, but it's going out and moving. So we're continually moving at about 200 million miles an hour, a minute, or maybe a second. We're moving really fast, I forget. But we're moving really fast, so we're changing not just the location, but we're changing the electromagnetic fields. And all of these electromagnetic fields actually have an effect on timelines. Because timelines are based on going from position to position to position. So if you're going along your life and everything seems very good and everything, all of a sudden you might find yourself completely feeling out of sorts, like you don't know what happened, something doesn't feel right, what happened. There is the likelihood that you've just changed a timeline that you had no control over. Because we went into a position within the galaxy where the entire electromagnetic fields have shifted. There's more radiation. A woman by the name of Starfire Tor has done amazing science concerning the effect of solar radiation on timelines. And I honestly do not understand the science. I just trust what she's telling us because she knows the science, and she would tell us on her Facebook group, okay, the sun is about to let off a burp here, and that's going to probably be a significant timeline change. And because she was giving us forewarning, then you began to notice changes. And sometimes they were very subtle. They just felt like an energy change. But sometimes they were very obvious. And I've told this story before, but if nobody's heard it, they should. So she had said that there was going to be a definite attack on the timeline stability. And we were just gone through it. We were actually transforming through it. And one of her Facebook people wrote and said, can a timeline change be life and death? She said, because both my husband and I just found out that Michael Douglas's father, Kirk, is alive. But we remember Michael Douglas being outside of a cemetery and crying, being interviewed because they had just buried his father. And, you know, as soon as she said this, I went, oh, my God, I've got that same memory. And then we started writing back and forth, and there was a number of people involved in looking at this. And we all had, okay, we could remember the Michael Douglas thing. We also had a memory of Nelson Mandela dying in prison. We also knew that Ernest Borgnine had died, 10 years ago. And there was another one. Oh, that's another story. I don't know that I'll tell that one.
But that was the Mandela one. Died in prison.
In prison. There was the Mandela in prison. There was the Michael Douglas. And there was the, there was three of them. Oh, Ernest Borgnine. But the other one that occurred that was, to me, extremely significant, was the Congresswoman Gifford when she was the attempted assassination on her. Now, I was home, it was a Saturday, and I was not necessarily napping, I was sort of like, I just get quiet and, you know, the television was on and, you know, I'm sort of like just meditating and dozing, but I also monitor the news all the time, especially on Saturdays, just to find out what the people were being told. And anyway, they cut in and they were talking about the assassination attempt in Tucson. And so, you know, like I kind of looked over at the TV and I see this picture of a woman with shoulder length brown hair, a pretty girl, looking directly into the camera. And they started talking about this assassination attempt and they were showing film and everything. And I'm not sure how long this went along because, like I say, I was in this kind of weird meditative whatever state, and then all of a sudden they said that public broadcasting had announced that she had died of her wounds. And so I'm going like, oh wow, that's a bummer now. You know what I mean? I'm just really feeling sad about the whole thing. And then about, not within 15 minutes, they came back and they said, no, they found out that, it was, she is alive. And I look up at the television. Now I had seen this picture of this woman at least 25 times. Every time I looked up, it was on the television. But after they declared her dead and then declared her alive, and the next picture I saw, I never saw that other picture. The new picture was what she looks like now with the short blondish hair. And I immediately realized that there had been a timeline change. On one timeline, she had died. On the timeline that we were on, she had survived. So, but I only understood that because of, I'd been following Starfire for so long. So to understand and to feel and to comprehend timelines, you sort of have to pay attention to the details.
So, Nancy, let's have a quick, I just want to sort of catch that one and say, here's really twisted paranoid and kind of, sci-fi projection on that, but the, in one timeline, perhaps the natural timeline, she was assassinated by the cabal, but on another timeline means that one of the white hats has gone back in time and guided the situation, so that it doesn't work out so bad. I mean, perhaps there might be several going back and forth in that. I mean, how much do you think they mess about with time? Do you think that they know the consequences of what they're doing? Yes.
Give me a second to answer that question and remember it in case I get lost. Essentially, what I think happened is that there were two alternatives. She dies or she doesn't. Okay? So we watched a timeline end. And if you're aware of it, for whatever reason, she becomes important on the timeline that we are on now, which is the fight against the just despicable evil. So her soul, that's her mission. They killed her on one timeline, okay? And that's where it gets tricky. I had a situation where, you've read the first book, so you would know this, where after I got out of the military, I needed to talk to somebody that was a psychic, understood psychics, and was a psychiatrist, because I was having a real hard time adjusting back into civilian life. So I mentioned this to somebody that I was working as a waitress in a restaurant, and this girl says, oh, I know somebody just like that. So I said, I thought she was kidding me, because who would think that somebody like that existed? But she said, no, seriously, I've got a friend. She said, I'll set you up, we'll go see him, you know? So we did, we went and saw him. And as soon as we looked at each other, a telepathic link occurred. And I realized that he was part of the remote viewing program that the U.S. military was conducting. You guys might know it as the one that created they talked to goats, or they killed
the men
goats.
Who stare at goats.
They stare at goats.
Yeah.
Right.
The guy who wrote the book, not the film. The film's just a comedy, but it's a really serious subject. And, yeah. So you met this guy who's essentially what we call an RV, remote viewer, and
he was not so much the RV. He was one of the people that was administrating the entire program. I did not get I didn't ask him about that, but I didn't feel like he was doing it, that he could do it. But that he was, let me tell you a little bit more of the story. So what happened was that, after a while, these guys burn out. So they had built in a time period where they would just take off. And he was in a sabbatical situation, and he was just kind of like back home and opening up his psychiatry business a little bit. you know, but he was really decompressing when he meets me. So, this telepathic link, it was obvious to him that I knew a great deal about what he did. So he immediately began to think that I was part of his organization, but he didn't know me. And finally, it got so confusing, and the communication was going so fast that I actually stopped it, and I said, "No, wait." I said it verbally. I said, "I was not part of your group. I remote viewed you." And he was like, "What?" And I said, "That's the truth." You know, and so he immediately said, "Well, okay, I'm going to have to talk to you." But we had this friend of his mind in his with us. So he rescheduled, and I went back a couple of days later. And he put me through a series of tests, and he was showing me mostly drawings of different components. And he would say, now, the reason that I ever remote viewed these people was because I was reading Time magazine. And in Time magazine, there was an article about this remote viewing capacity the U.S. government had. And I knew that I was using telepathy to spy on the Soviets in my position as a Soviet expert. So I thought, well, gee, maybe I better get with these people. So I asked a full bird colonel if he would look into this for me. And within 10 days, he came back to me, and he said, "Don't ever do anything like that to me again." And I said, "What?" And he said, "These people scared the crap out of me." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "No matter what kind of clearances you and I have," he says, "these people are untouchable." He said, "I did not tell them where I found out." He said, "I told them I read that Time magazine thing. I didn't mention you at all." He said, "But you cannot get near these people." And so I said, "Okay." And so then I remote viewed them. I telepathically intruded on them and found out what they were doing. So that's what he had picked up on. But now he's got all these pictures in front of me, and he wants me to tell him what it is. And so he's flipping up these pictures, and what he was showing me was electronic components of a piece of equipment that I had seen. I had actually seen this thing in pieces, because every time I would remote view these people, which was periodically because it was like fun, I would come across this electronic stuff, you know, images in people's heads and stuff. And so being in electronics and knowing components and things, I could pretty well figure out what they were. So then he finally shows me this one picture, and I said, "I don't know what that is. I've never seen that." And he said, "Would you see if you can find out what it is?" And, I was stupid. I said, "Yeah, sure, whatever." And so I said, "But I haven't been doing any of this, so it's going to take me a while to get into position to do it." And you know, now that I'm thinking about it, talking to you, Jay, it's like, it's really weird that I didn't question this more. Maybe I wasn't paranoid enough. I don't know.
Well, at that time, how were you to know what you were about to discover? I know what you were about to say, right? And it's like the dark clouds have appeared on the horizon.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we're now in phase two, the dark side. So, do continue, Nancy.
Well, what I think happens to us, I mean, think about it. I go to this guy because I'm having a lot of psychological problems adjusting to normal life, because I know all this really strange stuff and nobody else knows it. And I can't talk to anybody because they think I'm crazy. And, you know, they're not impressed with military credentials and electronic warfare. That's not impressive, you know. So I felt very alone. I felt very confused. And here I'm talking to this guy, and the next thing I know, I'm doing a long-range intrusion on a piece of equipment that the best the Americans have can't do. I mean, what the hell was – why didn't I wake up at that point?
So obviously they've been tracking you.
No, I think that my guides were putting me in this position. I think that sometimes we go through life and we're blinded by certain things. We don't see certain things. We don't think a certain way in order to experience the experience that we're on the path we're on. You know, it's like sometimes I look back and I go, why wasn't I paying attention? And I realize, I mean, I've been through some very sad and tragic things in my life. And every time it happens, everybody else gets, the news gets involved in it, and somehow or another I'm protected until all of the flack is gone. So I always have felt very protected, and I think that that goes also into this weird life that I've had where I've had these very strange experiences. You know, and it's like I say, it takes time in life to look back on certain things and go like, well, that's interesting. Anyway, so get back to the story.
So there was an electronic component that they couldn't identify. None of their RV guys had strangely none of the guys were able to penetrate what this component was. And they gave it to dear innocent Nancy. Okay, so what happened next?
Well, it did take about 3 days before I actually tried to remote view.
Oh, by the way, before we get anywhere, when you first looked at that photograph, what was your feeling?
I had none. I had no connection to it whatsoever.
Like
none.
It was,
and you again, yeah. You would think that somebody of my talent would have at least felt the negativity or been warned.
You'd have thought.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's weird. It's like they just kind of erase certain things from you. You only see this very, it's almost like looking down a tunnel, and you only see what they want you to see. And, you know, now that I'm thinking back about it, it's really kind of very interesting. But I think it was the good guys working with me, not the bad guys.
Guiding.
I don't think at that point that based on other indicators in my life, I believe that, well, first off, they were time traveling. I mean, time traveling has been occurring since the Philadelphia experiment, which was 42, I think. So the time travel, they've been doing this. They've been able to go looking into the future. And one of the most bizarre and interesting stories is involving the Philadelphia experiment. And probably everybody knows about this, but what they did was that in World War II, they kept upping the ante as far as weapon systems. And they had the bad guys had made a weapons, a torpedo that would not necessarily have to hit the hull of a ship. It would just get within the electromagnetic field that's generated by a ship moving through water. And that alone would cause a detonation of the torpedo. So, you could get more strikes because you didn't have to exactly hit it. So in order to counter this new threat, the Americans thought, well, what if we created they didn't know about Star Trek, but it was basically a force field concept where if they could design an electromagnetic field that would go far enough away that once it did detonate, it wouldn't hit the hull of the ship. So that's what they started out this particular experiment, at least is based on what I know. And then they realized, the electromagnetic field that we're talking about is very similar to light. I mean, it's only another frequency of light, so is there any way that we could actually create an electromagnetic field so powerful it would bend light? And that's what they attempted to do. And they were warned by Tesla. Tesla was totally freaked out by this experiment that they were about to conduct. And he sabotaged, and people don't know this story, he actually sabotaged the first attempt to test this. But they had a backup, and that's an amazing story. But anyway, they had a backup system. They put it on the Eldridge, which was an escort ship in the Philadelphia shipping lanes. They're right outside the shipping yard. And they turned this degausser, they call it a degausser, and what it is, it made a huge electromagnetic field. And people that were standing on the dock said that they could see the ship. It started to get this green mist that was going in a counterclockwise rotation, and all of a sudden they couldn't see the ship nor the mist, but they could still see the water displaced by the hull. So you're looking and you're seeing this, you know, like a ship is there, but you can't see it, but you can't see the ship at all.
And so there's a V-shaped notch in the water.
Yes, exactly.
Holy crap. So a green mist. I like the green mist. That sounds really SFX, doesn't it? They did do a remake. It's interesting. They did the remake of the Philadelphia Experiment film. I watched it a couple of years ago. And they mentioned Tesla's name about probably 23 times. Well, it's usually that number. Within the first 5 minutes of the film, really, they just like counting Teslas and that. So, they're really giving him a plug, but you're saying that he actually sabotaged the thing.
Oh yes, he was sure they were going to rip the time consortium.
Which they did, yeah, he was right.
He was absolutely correct. But he underestimated the fact that it could sort of be, that it wouldn't be catastrophic. He felt that if they tore the time dimension apart by doing this. Now did they? Now, yes, in fact they did. What happened was that, so you're standing in Philadelphia and you're seeing the ship disappear, except you can still see the hull, displacing the water. Well, at exactly the same time, within linear time, the Eldridge was spotted in the Norfolk shipping yards, which is in Virginia. And also, out at sea, it was seen by a convoy of ships. And all of a sudden, they got blips on their, you know, I don't even know if they had radar. Yeah, they probably had the radar on the ships at that time. But they saw, they visually saw the Eldridge, to the point that they were able to identify the ship by the number, even though the ship had not been commissioned at that time. That came out later, that they said they wrote down the ship number, and it was later investigators realized that this was the Eldridge. But it also was in at the same time. So in three different positions, you had indications of the ship. So, yes, it absolutely tore the time continuum, because that ship, the Eldridge, was later on at the exact berth within the Norfolk, and also was in the same position as it, within a convoy that, at a later date. So what had happened is that in two future positions that the Eldridge showed up, for some reason it showed up in the past, if you're following that. But that pass coincided with the exact time that they turned the degausser on and the ship disappeared. Now, what happened was that even though the ship came back seemingly unscathed, the people on the ship did not. There are gruesome reports of some people being found embedded in the, actually within the steel itself, as if they were on the ship disappeared, they moved, the ship came back into material frequency, and they were caught within the, you know, like the bulkhead. There is also two brothers that, and that's why that movie, with Dennis Quaid, I think it was Dennis Quaid, is so very, spooky, because in that movie, two brothers jump off the ship. And according to
Al Bielek.
Yes.
Yes, the famous Al Bielek, time traveler extraordinaire. Yeah, tell us about him.
Well, he's just astounding. I mean, I've heard interviews with him. I've got CDs of interviews, because this was before the internet even, of him being interviewed and the stories that he told. And much of my belief structure about what really happened is based on what he says. And what he said was that they just, the ship, had, they just freaked out and jumped over the side of the ship trying to get away from it. And they ended up falling through what he describes as kind of like a wormhole tunnel. And the next thing they know, they're 30 years in the future. They were now in 43 and 73.
Yeah, it's got this 20-year cycle thing going on as well, isn't it?
It's actually 30 years, I think. I think it was 70. I may be wrong. It's been so long, and I haven't, you know, looked
it's
back.
Actually, you know, we probably don't know yet, because the cycles haven't even extended themselves into, you know, it could be a whole octave of cycles. Now,
that is true.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a really enormous implication. And is it possible that we could repair the timeline to stop the Philadelphia experiment from ever happening?
Well, that's what gets really interesting is that let me go on with the story about
Okay, go.
The remote viewing, and we'll tie that in. So I tried the remote viewing thing, and I woke up in the morning. I felt really good, so I said, okay, let me give this a try. So I envisioned this picture, this drawing that he has shown me. And what would happen when I would do this in the past is, like, I was doing it with Soviet equipment. So I would, the CIA would find a new piece of equipment, like a truck out there, and they'd send me the picture. And so then I would just meditate and focus in on the picture until the picture became a real object that was, like, right in front of me. And, you know, at that point, I could virtually go inside the truck or trailer or whatever it was and look around, you know, just like I was standing in it. So that's how remote viewing worked with me. And so I focus in on this image, and boom, I can see very quickly the physical object in front of me. But then it was almost like I all of a sudden found myself inside a tunnel that was collapsing, and it was all black, but within the blackness was all these Nazi swastikas, just swastikas all over the place, just whoa, whoa, whoa. And I felt such intense, unbelievable, mind-bending fear that I immediately, you know, came out of it. And it was like, it shook me up. I've never been that fearful for, you know, I mean, it was just awful. And so I said, well, that was fun, you know. And so I attempted 3 more times to get through, not that same day. It was over a period of 3 days. And by the 3rd day, I'm going like, I don't know what this is, but this is something that I cannot crack. And I didn't feel the fear the next times. I just couldn't get through. What I realized was happening was that somebody was watching, waiting for a signal. And I said, that's how the others couldn't get through. So it's almost like having a fuzzbuster in your car. And when the radar hits the fuzzbuster, it beeps. It says, I just got hit with a radar. Well, in this situation, a long-range telepath trying to intrude was sending out a signal that was being received by people who only sat around waiting for somebody to do just that. And the moment that they felt an intruding telepathic or remote viewing signal, then they would focus on the things that would terrify you. In my case, it was Nazis. They scared the shit out of me. So,
holy crap! So this is the thing. So you just to recap, because we went around the houses a little bit to put some background there, but. Basically, you were given a series of photos of electronic components which you identified, one that you didn't, and the guy said, would you mind, just having a look for this one, would you? And they've probably done the same. And probably the guys, you know, had to be committed or something, you know, when they tried to penetrate it. So they may have given you that to see, you know, not so kindly, but you know, it's like the Moa Dib thing. Meanwhile, so you get the whole Nazi signal, and so you go back to the guy, and what do you say to him?
Well, what happened was I called him up, and he said to me, I mean, I said. Then he said, yes, he said, you tried to get through, didn't you? And I said, yeah. And he said, I need to see you immediately. He said, but be very careful. Okay, so I go on over to his place, and he never even let me inside his door. Now, he had a small apartment. It wasn't like an office building. It was like a small apartment building. And he wouldn't even let me in the door. And I look inside, and everything in there is being packed. It's in boxes. And I said, what's happening? And he said, when did you make the first attempt? I said, I told him I had tried three times. He said, when did you make the first attempt? And I told him, and he said, uh-huh. He said, your signal must have been so strong that you freaked them out. He said, 3 days ago, which corresponded to the time that I had first attempted it, he said, there was a massive attack on all of the known remote viewers and psychics in America and Britain and France and Israel. And I said, what? He says, I've been comatose for 3 days. I saw him on the fourth day. He says, I've been comatose for 3 days. He said, I just got out of the hospital. And, like, I'm, like, freaking out and going, like, oh, what is this, you know? And he said, do you have any glimmering of what that device was for? I said, all I know is that what you were showing me was a device that was working within the psychic frequencies. And I have to assume that it was in order to penetrate the human psyche. And he said, absolutely correct. And he said, and that is the component that we don't understand, but somebody else does. And they, in fact, have turned on that machine. And, you know, it's like by this time I'm going fairly telepathic with him, but not like on the first episode. It was like he was either hiding from me or he was so fearful, or but there was not a clear communication happening. And I said, well, how does this thing work? And he said, basically what they've done is they're able to duplicate the electromagnetic frequency of the human body. He said, when they're dead on, he said, the human body will explode in a flash of fire and light. He said, we've lost three of them that way. He said, if they're off a little bit, he said, the dysfunction in their minds can't function anymore. And he said, we don't even know how many of those we've lost.
Well, we will come back to this very exciting story. Nancy L. Hopkins, thank you. Don't go away. You will continue the journey into the darkness. Welcome back to Journeys with JP. Speaking with Nancy Hopkins, we had telepathically contacted the Nazis. We had been examining components that were given by the department. The department was hit by a telepathic blast that put some of them in hospital, that disabled most of them, and possibly even vaporized others. This was something pretty serious, and it was just something that this is your first encounter. So there must have been a kind of a large number of mixed feelings. I do hope hope you're there. Nancy, are you there with me still?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good. One big thing and, then nothing happened. Anyway, so, there must have been a whole bunch of mixed feelings at that moment. I mean, did you sense the kind of the danger and what the heck's going on? And were you hit? Did they hit you?
First off, when he's explaining this to me, my first reaction was of one of absolute anger. I was as angry at him as I was at anybody else that would think that it was within their right to delve into this kind of a science. So I had a gut reaction that, man, you're all crazy. You have no right to do this. I mean, I was really fundamentally, as a human being, pissed off. But then I tried to make sense of what I was hearing as an intelligence expert. You know, pull out the information. Let me get a feeling for what exactly is happening. So at that point, I was really trying to get inside his mind because I knew that the answers I could get from his mind would be much more details than whatever he would tell me, because he wasn't telling me any of it.
So you could walk into his mind like a library?
No, not so much like a library. You have to get where they're focused on. You can't just, you have to get inside what their beta frequency is, which is the frequency of the brain that's operating on a normal 3D level.
So that's on the, like on the conscious mind, each mind vibrates at a slightly different frequency. Is that right? A unique frequency?
Yeah, the conscious mind vibrates at the beta frequency. When you're in a meditative state or just before you're falling asleep or you're in creative state, you have an alpha frequency that starts to dominate the brain.
Then and that's always the same frequency?
It's always the same frequency.
So
yeah.
Although in our mental, this is very interesting from, you know, from my esoteric psychology point of view, is looking at the way that, you know, empirical data, like you're bringing me, is saying that there's a spread when it comes to the personal expression. And yet when meditation happens, everybody is in the same frequency. Everybody's locked in. Everybody's at one. There is atonement. There is attunement. Everybody's at the same accord.
You're operating at the same frequency, yes. When you're creative, just before falling asleep, or when you're in a meditative state, that all creates the alpha frequency being created within the brain. It's like you can't get into those states without being in an alpha frequency.
So, go ahead.
The beta frequency is detected when you're working, you're at work and you're going through processing. You it's an interesting thing. You could have a combination of alpha and beta depending on how focused you are on your work. But if you get up and you go to the coffee machine, you're definitely in a beta frequency. You understand? It's like you can start to get meditative or focused, and that also will bring in, you know, so some people operate more at an alpha frequency than a beta frequency because they just get into whatever they're doing. You know how when you walk up to somebody and they look at you like they're kind of dazed? You know, well, they're really working in an alpha frequency, and you just interrupted that. But what's more interesting is that when you go into deep sleep, REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, you have a frequency that's detected that's called the theta frequency. And the theta frequency, now you've heard of biofeedback, and that's designed to create, well, first off, they started it with trying to just understand the differences between the frequencies in the brain in different states. And then they realized that you could actually train people to go into the alpha state. And that became known as biofeedback. And they would basically watch measurements of their alpha-beta relationship, and they would know when they were creating a more alpha signal. And so they knew that that feeling is an alpha signal state that will bring in this alpha state. So that's what biofeedback's about. So, but then they started finding theta in the REM sleep environment, and they have never been able to create the same kind of capability of training people to go into the theta state. Now, what's really fascinating about that is that they had one young man who came along, and they started, you know, trying to put him through to get him into the theta state, and he was like, boink, yep. I mean, it was like he would just jump into the theta state. And, you know, finally they found out that this young man had ingested a tremendous amount of, well, I don't know, tremendous amount. He had ingested LSD, not once, but numerous times.
Numerous occasions had he administered lysergic acid. So he was a zoner, was he?
Well, all they knew was that he somehow or another could get into theta state. But that connects to a study that was done in Toronto University in the 70s. And they took a number of known psychics and tested them. And the first thing they did was just verbally test, you know, what happened that could have created this psychic state in you people. And interestingly enough, they discovered that every one of them had a severe electrical shock before the age of 10. Now, the guy that was the most, was testing out to be the most powerful psychic was a young man by the name of oh gosh, Matthew, what's his last name? Matthew, I can't remember his last name.
Matthew Manning?
Not Matthew Manning. but anyway, maybe it is Matthew Manning. Is that what I wrote in the book?
Which is psychic.
Yeah. Yes, he was the most psychic, but what happened was that he could not remember having any kind of an electric jolt. But then they talked to his mother, and his mother, when she was pregnant with him, had an electric jolt. So now they're looking at the brain and they're thinking, is an electric jolt on a specific developmental condition of the brain what creates the ability to go into the theta state? Because what they had already discovered was that when a psychic is doing a psychic thing, they are in the theta state. So you go, okay, if you're in the psychic state, you're in the theta state, and the theta state corresponds to REM sleep. So when you're fast asleep and you're in a psychic state, you're exhibiting the same brain frequency. Now, what happened was that one of the people who wasn't really specifically working on the project saw the electrocephalogram of the brain scan of the psychics. And he said, I've seen that before. And they said, when? Where? And he said, in patients of mine on LSD. So now they discovered that the signal when you're on LSD is the same frequency as if you are in REM sleep or in a psychic state, the theta state. Interesting, huh?
Very, very interesting. Now, having experienced once or twice, well, not that many, times of ingesting the aforementioned acid, I've had some good times and I've had some very bad times, and I've had enough. That'll do. But what I did do, it was like I was a child again. It opened everything up again. Like I had no adult filters, no adult ego consciousness.
Well, I'll tell you chemically what happens. The brain operates like a computer. So if it sees a blue, it wants to bring in every blue it's ever seen. Well, the brain uses serotonin to control the spontaneous eruption of thought. So when in an awake brain, you have a lot of serotonin, and it basically is dampening the computer system so that it will focus only on the most obvious blue. When you start to fall asleep, the serotonin starts to leave your brain. And you cannot get into REM sleep without serotonin dropping to basically your zero point. Now, and when you take LSD, the chemical composition of LSD is so close to serotonin that it actually fools the RAF cells of the brain that are producing the serotonin to think that the brain is full of serotonin. They stop producing. The serotonin drops in the brain. But you are awake. You're not in REM sleep. So you are essentially awake. I mean, you're essentially in a dream state in the frequency of your brain. But you're not asleep. You're wide awake. And that's where you get the hallucinations, because the serotonin is not there to dampen the imaging. Now, when that happens, when you are... I do not recommend anybody taking hallucinogenic trips, and I'll tell you why. If you are not being protected, if you are not ready for this type of thing, you can be severely damaged. Do not underestimate the dangers that are there. For other people, it is a gateway to another dimension, the dimension that I believe is, in fact, the fifth dimension, the dimension we are going to. I believe the shamans work within the fifth dimension. Anybody who has control over the theta state is virtually thinking in the fifth dimension. Now, going back to our never-ending story here, what happened was that in attempting to link up with him, he just turned to me and he just let me into his brain, and what he showed me in an instantaneous flash of just a tremendous amount of information was that he was not of this earth. And at that moment in time, I believed that extraterrestrials probably existed, but I certainly had no comprehension that somebody from either another dimension or another part of the universe could possibly be inside a human being. I didn't know about walk-ins. I didn't know about any of this stuff. And so all of a sudden, this guy is telling me that he's really from another place in the galaxy, and he's just letting me see so much information. And I said, so what am I supposed to do? And he said to me verbally, we cannot tell you what to do. We can only give you the information. He said, but I highly recommend that you read the Philadelphia Experiment, which was odd because I had it on my bookcase. I had bought it but never read it. So that was an easy fix. And then as I'm leaving, I said to him, was there anything that is common to all the events of the psychics getting hurt? And he said, yes. He said, there was always a blonde. He said, in too many cases, there was a young blonde male stranger. I said, that's it? And he says, that's it. A stranger who was blonde and male. That's it. So I go and I read the Philadelphia Experiment, and now I understand more about the time concept and all of this. But what happened was that there was a terrible thunderstorm. I mean, it felt like there's somebody had turned on three or four showers on the roof. The roof was vibrating. It was the worst thunderstorm I've ever seen in my life. And I get a telephone call from this guy. Well, anyway, to make a long story short, I ended up going over to this guy and meeting with him, because I was firmly convinced that my interaction with my psychic friend, my remote viewing friend, had gotten this guy onto me. I felt danger. I was scared. But I also just was going with it. It's like I was so pissed off at these people. It was like, okay, you want to fight? Let's come on. Let's do it. Let's do it. I mean, I really was young and cocky. And maybe that's what makes some of us survive and some of us don't, is because fear will absolutely cripple you. And we're so just arrogant in our own belief system that we just think we can, you know, just beat them. And I think that was a lot of what was happening in me. And I go and I meet this guy, and he supposedly, I met him at this bar and, you know, come over and we'll smoke some hashish and, you know, but I'm just getting all these vibes about the guy. And then I walk into the apartment. Meanwhile, it's pouring out rain. I mean, that's a freaky story. I tell about it in the book. But I'm in his apartment. I look around and I say, this is not a lived-in apartment. You know, this guy is setting me up. So what I basically did was think, okay, what is he looking for? Because now I understand timelines. And I know that the chances are that he's on to me because of my meetings with Norman Vincent. And if I was just followed, that's one thing, on a 3D way. Were they following me at a different level, on a time aspect, you know, the really bad guys, were they looking at this whole thing? But regardless of it, it just felt like, if I can just stay with this man, I'm going to be okay. If he doesn't think I'm important, I'm going to be okay, because he's looking for somebody. He's looking for somebody that's going to be a danger to them in the future. But he's got to figure out on which timeline does this person exist. So if he gets with me and I act like I'm not the person, they'll leave me alone. And that's exactly what I did. I knew that I'd be looking for a theta signal. I was very careful to focus on being beta, And so what I did was I started explaining the psychic sciences to this time traveler to bore the heck out of him, but also to keep me focused on something that would not throw me into a theta state. And we were smoking really good hashish, and that was a technical problem. That they shouldn't have done that, because actually hashish will throw you into a beta state. It's interesting, but anyway, so that was actually helpful. But I felt after that the first off, one of the indicators of the fact it was a time traveling event was the rainstorm itself. Based on my research, when somebody time travels, more often than not, they can have an effect on the weather pattern, the electromagnetic and pressure systems when they come into a time zone, so they can create really strange weather phenomena.
And that's a really interesting thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very interesting.
What if these superstorms that we've been experiencing are things arriving or departing? Well, anyway, before I ask too many questions, let's continue with your story. So, blonde male strangers and extraterrestrials who turned out to be like your boss or handler, or I mean, what would they? You know, he was your psych. No. Anyway, go ahead, Nancy.
Well, that's basically, you know, the story of I forget, because I told you, I said, remember the question, because I had to tell this story in order to really answer the question that you asked about. And it was involving time travel. Could you go back and change time was what you asked. You know, could you mess
with
time?
That's right. Is it possible to heal the timeline of the Philadelphia experiment? So, but anyway, so here you are, and now you're back with Norman, and you've looked in his mind. He's given you this enormous download. You've gained some understanding. And where are you going with this?
Well, just the concept of the time travel. In other words, I do believe that in some future point, the powers that are in control saw me as being a problem to them. And so they went back in time to try to stop that. But they thought they had the wrong timeline. And there's some kind of a cosmic rule about you get one shot at somebody. If you miss them on a timeline by doing time travel, you can't go after them again. And I don't know, I don't have empirical proof or research proof for this, but I've seen too many people like myself and so many that I could name that really should have been bumped off. But they always had some kind of a experience of near death and survived. And if they're using time to try to go back and correct a situation and missing, it's like they get one shot at it. And then, no, you don't get another shot. And that brings us back to the question about, you know, the Kennedy timeline. When that ended, that timeline ended because even if those people had succeeded in beating the evil forces, it would have been them leading us into that enlightenment. By that timeline ending, or maybe going on, but for the most of us, we ended up in a timeline where all of them are eliminated. Now it becomes up to the individual person. There is no leader. I mean, when they did this, there was nobody out there leading people into analyzing the assassination. It was a bunch of individuals who said, no, there's something wrong here, like myself, who, you know, just started doing the research. And inevitably, if you start researching the Kennedy assassination, you always end up within the organization of secret societies. This could not have been orchestrated without some kind of a brotherhood working through different organizations, from the Secret Service to the Dallas Police Department to the CIA to the FBI. There had to have been this other organization within the governmental organizations. So all these researchers suddenly start seeing this horrible problem we have of the secret group that's controlling everything. So the assassination may not have led us to enlightenment from the standpoint of being able to kind of like eliminate the problem. It brought us to an enlightenment of understanding the problem, and that individually we continued on our own paths until the universe created the, or we created, I mean, because I can tell you as a researcher, and you probably now, you know, so the internet comes along, and now all of a sudden we have a way of organizing and of sharing information. And now we have a vast amount of control over the timeline, because control over the timeline is understanding it. And in my estimation, the rules of cosmic reality that I was taught through experience, basically, help us understand the timeline. You know, what is a timeline? A timeline is a reality. And a reality is what we think it is. Cosmic rule number one, reality is what we think it is. So when you look at it from that standpoint, you go, okay, the timeline that I'm on, that I'm conscious of, that's my reality. Well, what's the second rule? The second rule is majority wins. Now, there are some people, I am sure, that are so evolved and so powerful that they can go off on their own timeline. They don't need anybody else. But for the rest of us, we're on this path that is a collective. We're doing it together. We're doing this group thing. And some of us are here in a much more trained capacity, educated capacity, aware capacity, just to exemplify and to try to teach those others as they awaken. We really can't make them wake up. They have to wake up because their soul wants them awake. All we can do is keep feeding the collective consciousness, or what I prefer to call the super consciousness, because the super consciousness to me is all of mankind, all of the spirit world, all of the animal kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, all of it is the conscious mind of Gaia. Gaia being the biosphere of Earth and everything that exists. Within that context is where we can make them awaken. They are connected. The more we believe, the more we feed that unbelievable consciousness of Gaia to feed everybody within her biosphere the energy to actually become more than we are. And that's not right, because we already are all this power. We're just not aware of it. We're not enacting it. And so when I look at the concept of what we can do as individuals, it's like The third rule of cosmic reality is that those people that are in power will keep everybody else from knowing rule one and two, that reality is what we think it is, and majority rules. The fourth rule is that we don't have to do anything. The power is not in doing. It is in the being. In being, in understanding that we are intricate bioelectromagnetic beings that are only limited by a lack of imagination. And we can do so much more with everything by realizing rule one, reality is what we think it is. And rule two, majority rules. And majority does not have to be numbers, it can be power of thought. So if somebody just sits and thinks love, 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 because that is the frequency of balance, and once you're in a state of balance, then you're in a state of well-being. And when you're in a state of well-being, you can much more easily manifest. So it's all very interconnected. And the time element, the concept of timelines and time shifts, is just versions of a larger... You kind of have to open up your mind, and instead of thinking in terms of the material, think in terms of energies. And every single little thing, like a cup of coffee, it's created with all sorts of energies that go into just that. But it's only energy. Everything is energy. So once you begin to feel the complexities of the energies, you'll understand the power that you have. You'll be empowered because you have your mind that can formulate different versions of reality in imaginations, in just desires to make something different, something good out of something that wasn't. And you also have the heart. And oddly enough, the most powerful electromagnetic field in your human body is your heart. So it gets really simple. Focus on allowing your heart to just open up and flow with energy. Just flow with energy. It's always pure. There's no thinking involved in it. It's just a conduit to your higher self in a pure form. So don't be afraid to tell somebody you love them. Don't be afraid to tell the truth. Don't be afraid to, you know, explain stories of that seem preposterous. Let your whole being open up, and you will channel pure energy into this 3D timeline that we happen to be on. And the more we channel it, the more we empower ourselves to create a different reality. I'm sorry, Jay, got any questions?
Oh. Well, you see, the thing is that somebody suitably psychic doesn't need to have questions asked, and they'll just say the stuff because, you know, everybody who's tuned in will be listening and asking their own questions. And I'm sure that you really do answer a lot of the questions. What happened? What happened to the guy? His name Norman Vincent. He was packing his house up. He wouldn't let you in. What happened next?
Never saw him again.
Never saw him again.
And he said they were all going back to work. In other words, anybody that was out was going back, and they were all going underground. He actually said that. He said, we're going underground. At the time, I didn't understand the impact of maybe going underground. But, because they had no clue. And I said to him, so what am I supposed to do? He says, I can't tell you what to do. He says, but, you know, read the Philadelphia Experiment. And he warned me. He said, you're going to be safe. They don't know who you are. He said, you've never come up in any of the legal documents.
That's the thing.
Yeah, and he kept his mouth shut, obviously. And, I actually did hear about him later. He got involved in a, I fictionalized his name, but he got involved in a psychic reading when there was an air crash Christmas Eve in the Everglades. And it turned into a movie, and it's one of those great haunting stories, because it was one of these planes that sort of flew itself, and it kind of like landed in the Everglades, and so there were a number of people killed, but a number survived, but the plane itself, many of the parts were put into other planes, and those planes ended up being haunted by the chief engineer. And this guy, Norman Vincent, whose real name I don't even remember at this point in the game, was involved in doing a psychic reading in order to determine what had happened. So, and it was in a book about the haunting. So he did go on and, you know, survived quite well, but I never had further contact with him.
So, an interesting story about psychotronic imprinting, but what happened about the Nazis?
Well, the Nazis thing gets really interesting because that's when I started to, in the John Kennedy Jesus Christ connection, I make it look like I was seeing Nazi connections that led me to a specific point of view. But in reality, some of this information was crisscrossing. And once I started seeing the Nazi connection from my experience with him, then I went back and started looking for it. So I started looking, and other researchers wouldn't have been looking for it. And so I uncovered Nazi connections. Jim Mars, you know, I mean, the amount of information he's come up with is astounding. But back when I was into it, I didn't have access to the files he did. Not that I would have understood him. I think they're in German. So, I mean, he just bolstered my own research that, yes, in fact, the Nazis were intricately involved throughout our modern history. They just infiltrated the Freemasonry, and they've used the Freemasonry.
So, you want to... Talk about it. Talk about it. Definitely. I mean, let's see if we can bring some sunshine. We've been through the dark clouds, so now we've connected the Nazis with Freemasonry, and that they're the negative influence behind Freemasonry, or they've just unified with the negative influence that Freemasonry had already infiltrating it. I mean, this is a multiple thing, isn't it?
Well, I think that the Freemasons are not inherently evil. I do think it's a very powerful organization. And because there are so many similarities between the manipulation of the Nazi Brotherhood and the manipulation of the Freemasonry Brotherhood, that they could easily just merge within the context of just merging within the Freemasons and manipulating the Freemasons to do things like cover up the assassination of Kennedy because of their oath as being Freemasons. Not that they understood they were working for Nazis. So the Nazis kept themselves well hidden within the Freemasonry ranks. And the reason that they were allowed to do this, in my estimation, is that Freemasonry was so predominant. It was much more predominant than what we were led to believe early in the game. Now we understand it more. But, I mean, it was just worldwide. It's a very powerful organization. And when I was trying to find out more about the Freemasons, I kept encountering, my dad's a Freemason, or I know this one or that one. But nobody would explain anything about Freemasonry to me. And I finally found a book that starts out and said, this is only for Freemasons. But it was written about Freemasonry, and it was a huge book. I mean, it's 3 inches thick or something. And I went through this until I understood the theoretical basis of Freemasonry, which, to my astounding, surprise, was very similar to esoteric thought that I already knew. It was like, that's why in the book I say, is this mumbo-jumbo or is this enlightenment? Because if you look at it from, you purely get away from it and just look at it as a theory, I don't have any qualms about it. I don't have any questions of its relevancy or of its impact. But what happens is that in any given situation where you're trying to deceive somebody, you tell them a lot of the truth. Because that way you're within believability because it is the truth. But then you keep secret the things that make it go. And I think that that's what they've done, is that they've got the members of the Freemason Brotherhood who, at a certain level, just like in the Nazi Brotherhood, had a perception of reality that was dictated by a group that had a whole different concept of reality. And it is all very much controlled. So just because a person is a Freemason doesn't mean he's a Nazi. But I do believe that they were manipulated in many ways. And I mean, that goes in, and then, you know, into the connection with Freemasonry and the NSA. And every time you turn around, you see more of this insidious organization that, in actuality, you know, has so many truths in it. So, yeah, they confound us in many, many ways by hiding different truths, as it were. But when you look at the when we talk about Nazi and we sort of throw it around, the definition of democracy is everybody for one. The definition of communism is everyone for all. And the definition of fascism is all for the state. But when you're talking Nazi, you're talking a philosophy of everything for the party, for the brotherhood. And that goes beyond the limits of a nation. It is much more expansive. And so when I talk in terms of Nazis, it's people that don't even have an allegiance to a nation. They have an allegiance to a brotherhood. And they do not know who the leaders are of that brotherhood or what they have planned for them. And that kind of a mentality is very dangerous. But you see the same kind of a mentality throughout society, in that most people just go along with what they're being told is real. They don't question it. They don't question who's telling me, who's controlling reality. And until most people wake up and say, wait a minute, who says that's true? Who are they? They're not going to be able to see the daylight. But once you see the daylight, once you understand what's clouding your reality, what has been dominating the truth, the science, the history, the first thing you confront when you start to open up your mind is to confront the lies. And you feel betrayed. And once you feel betrayed, you feel anger. And once you feel anger, then you're empowered. Now, unfortunately, too many people, instead of feeling angry, they get fearful. And I'm saying, get angry. Get angry in a controlled way. These people have been playing us for stupid. We're not stupid. We're waking up. We know how powerful we are. We understand the rules of cosmic reality. We know they're trying to keep us from knowing rules 1 and 2. But hey, we know rule 1 and 2. Reality is what we think it is. And what we're going to think it is a world in which you don't have 1.3 million people who are depending on unemployment suddenly being cut off by a government that thinks they're much less worthy of assistance than the oil companies. We can't allow this kind of thinking to continue. We have to wake up. That's just one example of thousands of them. But there are ways out of it. There are ways out of it. There are solutions. And we really don't have the time to go into all the solutions that are out there. But I can tell you it starts with the individual. Understand there's a problem. Understand you are the solution. Once you begin to take responsibility for your own reality, to say, you know, you don't have to think in details. That's the beauty of the cosmos of cosmic reality. You don't have to think in details. All you have to do is lead with your heart. If you think it's wrong that one human being is starving while other human beings have so much money they could be burning it because it's worthless anyway, and they know it. If you think there's something wrong with that, then allow your heart to flow into the grid system. Allow your mind to say, no, enough is enough. And just say, this is going to stop. A new future is going to be there. A future of positiveness. Don't get into the details. Become that positiveness. You know, work every day to just be a better human being. To not, you know, to understand who you are. I'm firmly convinced that the only way that we can fully take control is to understand why we do things. Because that seems to be the control mechanism for me. Is that if we understand why we do certain things, then it's the only time, the only place where we can take full control over our own destinies. Is to know why. And how many times do you see people just reacting? Why are you doing this? You know? When you say to somebody, why are you doing this? They should be able to say, because of this. Boom, 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 boom. Then you've got a thinking, powerful human being. But if you're just reacting, you know, what's the point? You're not learning. You're not taking control. You're not enjoying it. You're just going through the motions. And I can also tell you that once you do become aware, then life takes on an excitement of unfathomable fun. It just becomes fun. You meet people who understand you, who think the same way you do, who have the open hearts, who don't hesitate to use the word love. It just opens up everything. And yeah, I tell people, if you're not paying attention to current events and if you're not listening to the internet and you're not getting involved in different groups, you're missing out on a really, really fascinating sci-fi story. I mean, the science just alone that they kept secret from us is ridiculous.
And plus the time travel interference. I mean, that's such a sci-fi movie in itself. I really think you need to talk to Solaris, you should check out her program. She's very interested in this whole thing as well. So in the last 15 or so minutes, Nancy, I've been getting these feelings of waves of, well, the last three, you know, last 3 days, basically. Today's the first day I felt like, oh, I could stand up without feeling kicked in the guts. But a lot of other people, Muggsy and other psychics I know, have been completely bedridden for the last 3 days. Very much like what you were talking about. This one feels like it's a clearing, it's a cleansing. What's the deal with what's going on right now? I can feel something. Can you feel something? Is it just me?
No, what's happened is that we've gotten to a plateau. Those of us that are out there kind of pushing the envelope, we're pathfinders, and we've gotten to a plateau. And so we have to sit here and kind of like just solidify the energies. The fact that you're feeling so tired and that you need to sleep is because they need to ground some energies. And it's almost like making a beacon that will draw the rest of them to this next plateau. And as soon as they get here, then we're going to get this shot of energy and we're going to jump to the next plateau. So it's something I've seen all my life, and I don't fight it anymore. I used to fight it. If you suddenly start feeling like weak, or if you suddenly start having things like a virus in your computer, things that are stopping you, stop. Don't push it. Just sit back. Because what it is, it's like you have to, you can't, it's sort of like a wave. You know, if you ever watch a wave starts to build, the cap starts coming up, and then there's this hesitation. Until the rest of the wave comes in and then doom, gives it the amount of energy to fall over the top. That's where I see us right now, that we're about to go over the top. But we need this, the rest of people to wake up and just give us that little extra boost of energy to go plump. That's what I'm seeing. So, and I am feeling it. I mean, they had me basically, especially today. I mean, today was crazy. It was like I'd go out to do something, and the next thing I know, no, got to lay down again. And it was when I lay down, I start doing the repetitive love, because I feel that that is the balancing energy, that the energy is the energy that is needed by Gaia at this point, and it's Gaia that needs to be, you know, adjusted and filled with the energy. There is about to be a leap. How big? How much will it'll impact us? I don't know, but we're definitely at the cresting the wave, as I see it.
Wow. So, we're all cresting the wave. There is a gentleman, we call him Wingman. He'd like to ask a question live. Are you happy in the last few minutes?
Sure.
Here we go. Let's call him in. Mr. Wingman. Come on then. Pick up the phone. Come on. I know you're out there. You wanted to ask. There you are. Hello, Mr. Wingman.
Hello. Thanks for letting me ask a question with Nancy. Hi, Nancy.
Hello there.
I wanted to ask you about what your thoughts are on this particular timeline. And the reason being, and I wanted your opinion on this, I have at least about four or five sets of memories from what I'm absolutely sure is a different timeline. Things that I was going to do that I didn't do, but I have a memory of having done them someplace else. And one particular instance is orientated around something catastrophic happening, where I remember asking my friend, you know, come with me, I've got a boat, we'll go over, you know, to the continent, and so on and so forth. And also another memory, a very similar time, where people I entrusted said, well, you were foolish to trust me, when it was revealed who exactly what part they played and who they were. So I'm a bit fazed by it. I don't, but it feels so real, you know, that there was this other kind of timeline that these events happened, and then one other timeline where they should have already passed and happened already, but they haven't. Does that mean anything to you?
I do think that there are certain people who learn certain things on a timeline that they do take over to another timeline. In other words, it is a memory. It is a clear-cut memory of another timeline. But that timeline, for whatever reason, in a way that your soul probably understands, but you not so much, was not going to be the most beneficial to your own development. So instead of continuing that timeline, then you jump to what is another timeline, the timeline that is more productive. I think that, you know, you go, why is it that you're conscious of only one timeline? Well, I think it's because that timeline is the dominating timeline for your development at the soul level. Okay. You know, so I have no doubt that those memories are in fact other timelines.
Right.
It could be from a past lifetime, but if you feel like no, it's actually your memory, then it is your memory. Don't underestimate.
Yeah, no, because it's the same locations, but I've done slightly different things, if that makes sense.
Could it be that he's experienced time traveler interference?
I wouldn't think so. I don't feel that. I feel that it's one of the ways that we do learn. Because I'm not unfamiliar with what you're saying to me. Okay. I've got experiences of myself where I go, why would I know that?
Right.
You know, and when I think back about it, I'm like, it's like, it feels like it was on another timeline, because I understand timelines now. So,
I have another question quickly. We've got a few minutes left, have we, or are we still okay for another question, JP?
On you go.
Do you think there's a correlation between one's energetic state and the relative time frame that you're in? And the reason I asked the question, I had a strange episode, which was came as a bit of a surprise, but my Kundalini, for the hopefully you're familiar with the term, was activated. And I was in a particular location with a lot of people bustling and hustling around, and I saw time anomalies, really strange, like time skipping, and I witnessed the sun setting in a matter of seconds. It was really like I was just observing, and I just saw the sunset arc through the sky really quickly, and it was very strange. And I'm just wondering, do you think that there's something to do with energy and time, one's energetic state and the relative time that you perceive, maybe?
Well, right now we're going through what's called the proton belt. And what that is that if you stand back and you think of the Milky Way, you've got a black hole in the center of the Milky Way. And what's happened is that we are going through an area where we are lined up with that black hole that is spewing, because even though it brings in most of the radiation and energy around it, it also spews out other stuff. And that other stuff is being projected directly into and around us. So we know that every time we get to this place in the universe, in the galaxy, that we have a massive change in the evolution of mankind. The great ape was, you know, at the same time frame. I mean, in the revolution of the 27,000 years that it takes to go around the galaxy. Every time we get to this position within the proton belt, because of all the different energies that are involved there and the cosmic rays and the dust and the changes, every time we get there, there are changes. And so what's happening is that our timelines, which are all designed to operate in a certain bioelectromagnetic environment that, you know, we've been in before, that we've been going through in the Piscean Age. Now in the Aquarian Age, all of a sudden they're being bombarded by a tremendous amount of stuff that is in fact changing the parameters of location, of place. And time is a relative, we talked about this in the beginning of the show, is relative to space, your own physical body, and place. And that place is changing because it's not just, you know, a coordinate. It's also the chemistry of it, the electronics of it, the everything that goes into it can change. So what I see happening is that there are a lot of, even from moment to moment, you can almost have a timeline that there, you know, normally you think of the timelines as running fairly parallel to one another. But when we're in this kind of an environment, I see the timelines like twisting and crossing.
Well, that's all we got time for today. Thank you so much for coming on, Nancy, and expanding our minds with that enormous lever of yours. That's incredible. Thank you very much. Wingman, thanks for calling in.
Thanks for saying, Michael. Thank you.
Excellent, man.
Be safe out there.
Be safe. Cosmicreality.weebly.com.
Actually, cosmicreality.net.
Cosmicreality.net. There it is. You heard it first. God bless you all. Thank you. See you next week. See you next year.